Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable Absolutely. Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. I'm executive producer Charles Gilbert. On today's show, we kick off Hispanic Heritage Month with the What's Next team traveling to El Bate, Puerto Rican Community Center. But first, PATH, People Against Human Trafficking of West New York, is celebrating 10 years. The executive director, Julie Palmer, sits with Jay Moran to speak on the milestone of the organization and their upcoming gala on September 25th.
Good to see you, Julie.
Great to be here.
You know, obviously human trafficking, huge, serious issue, but we're going to get into this conversation with, I guess, a little bit of a, what we're going to call a celebration of sorts.
Yes.
It's 10 years for 10 years. PATH, and you're going to have a gala coming up at the end of the month.
We are. Yeah, we're really excited that it's 10 years that we've been providing services at our PATH Enrichment Center in the city of Buffalo. And it's actually the month of September marked the 10th year. So on September 25th, we are having a 10-year anniversary celebration. It's open to the public. We're really excited about it. We have a lot of really exciting things happening. We actually have Chelsea Lavelle, that's our MC.
Very nice.
We have Judge Jahar Pridgen, who is going to be presenting and speaking. And then we have multiple testimonials from survivors who really tell amazing stories of resilience, how they overcame, what happened to them in our region, how it affected them, and then the way that our organization has helped them in their restorative process. And then for some fun, we have a live auction.
Oh.
And we are going to have, you know, the Bills are helping us out by their big win. That was an amazing game.
Yes, it was.
We have a signed Josh Allen jersey that'll be up for bid.
That'll do well, I'm sure.
I imagine so. They need to keep doing it good this month for me.
Yes.
We have an Airbnb in South Carolina, a week stay.
Oh, okay.
That's being contributed. We have a signed guitar by a music producer.
Wow.
And we have several other items that we're going to showcase for people to be able to bid on to make some fun at the end. So it's going to be a great night. We're going to share our history as well. So it'll be kind of a history of listening to people that have been a part of our work for the past 10 years and share their story and just really have an opportunity to see the impact, learn at the same time, and then be a part of a big movement of seeing lives transformed, even though this is a dark issue.
So it's coming up on September 25th, Fox Grove in the out in West Seneca. I've been
yes.
there for numerous events from baseball league celebrations to weddings. It's a lovely
beautiful
place.
Venue.
But I think you have a hard cutoff date for reservations, right?
We do. So by September 18th, we need people to RSVP. If they go right to our website, pathofwny.org, pathofwny.org. As soon as they click on it, a screen is going to pop up with a link right to the site where they can register. And so we're really excited. We have had a great response. Several hundred so far have registered. So we are getting close to our cap. So we do encourage people to do quickly respond. But I think it's going to be a really great night. And we have some really amazing community partners that we get to celebrate.
And again, the idea of celebrating, and we take human trafficking, nothing to celebrate there. But we did this the last time we chatted, but you know, I think it's notable that past victims of human trafficking will be there sharing their stories. For us right now, I mean, if you want to amalgamize, if that's a word, some stories together, or if you want to think of just one specific story mm-hmm. that you'd like to share about, you know, what happened to somebody, mm-hmm. how they were freed from the situation, and now where mm-hmm. they are now. If you could maybe take us through, yeah. whether it's a story or a collective of stories, I think that's, you know, yeah. it's so powerful.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, it is a dark issue, you know, and it's heavy at times. Our team feels that. And I think what keeps us going and helps us carry on is once we see the restoration transformation process occur. And that's what we celebrate. I think, you know, we're doing video testimonials. And as we were recording them with our videographer, honestly, I was speechless, which is hard to do for anyone who knows me well. Just for one, you know, in my role, I'm not as close with the client care as my team trying to administrate. But just hearing more depth and detail to what actually happened to them and how freely they shared that, and not in a way that they were being re-traumatized, but in a way they were feeling empowered.
Really?
That they were able to educate and let people know, yes, this kind of thing is not just on TV. This is happening right here. And it was interesting to see how much that empowered them, you know, because there's always the concern of being really thoughtful about their trauma, but the individuals that stepped up and said, I want to talk, really felt like it was an opportunity to be an advocate and be empowered. And so that was a beautiful thing. And then just hearing how our team was impacting them completely floored me.
Okay.
Just not realizing how just daily interaction with people and regard and care and meeting people where they're at without judgment was the biggest theme of what they found most healing. And so it just speaks to how important it is as a community that we need to be thoughtful about how we consider people in their story and their trauma and their victimization, because they really felt their change happened because there was a group that said, listen, we meet you where you're at. There's no judgment. And we're just going to continue to journey with you and care about you and your process. One that really stands out a lot was actually an individual I met near the beginning of us providing our services. And it was a federal trial. And they had asked, and you know, we were kind of early on, so my team wasn't as big. So I was doing some of the client care, and I was asked to kind of be an advocate and assist the individual through their journey of the trial, not going to the actual trial, but just being a support. And at the time, she was a teenager. And just hearing and seeing the experiences, and then what else she shared in her testimony of things about being locked in a trunk of a car for 3 days, locked in bathrooms of hotels, drugged, and had all sorts of men brought in the room that she doesn't even barely remember because of how drugged she was. Just the way family members were part and manipulating. In her words, I remember her saying this. She's like, it's the stuff you see on TV. This is actually happening to us. But her redemption of how even as a teen, she testified against major criminals, and how she's coming out of that on the other side now as an adult, and how she's using her story for her own healing has been very powerful to watch. And just as a woman to think, wow, you know, I don't even know if I'd be a functioning adult the way she is given the things that have happened to her. And so it's really remarkable to see how people really resonate with being cared for. I mean, that was what she continually said. I felt supported here. I didn't have a family. My family betrayed me. Path has become like a family, a community support, a safe space. They loved me no matter what. They never judged where I was at. I think that's really important. And I think sometimes when we're service providers, of course, we want to have good services and programs and be qualified and make sure we're victim-centered. But I thought just the basic need of human relatability was very profound for a lot of people we serve.
And I think it might be a moment right now just to put this out there. The likelihood that we know that there are people, there are humans who are being trafficked in mm-hmm. Western New York. We know
Absolutely.
That. And we want to get into maybe just where that is at in a moment. But at the same time, to somebody who either could be living that reality or perhaps knows somebody who is living that reality, what should they do?
If there's somebody right now that's in a circumstance of concern, definitely we have a 24-hour call and text line that they can call or text 716-601-5678. That's the fastest way they can reach out. It's protected and confidential. We also have our website where there's a contact page on there where they can email us. They can send a message on the actual website, whatever's most comfortable. We've had people go to our social media outlets and message us. We really try to be accessible and available, whatever people need. We always do say if somebody is in imminent danger, threat, right away, they need to call 911.
Okay.
You know, we can't, unfortunately, we don't have the resource to go and
But somebody might be afraid to call 911.
Right. They might. So if they called us, we can do that on their behalf.
Okay.
We are part of a task force with the Western District of New York, and there is law enforcement that are trained, that are part of this task force, that work closely with the NGOs to make sure that we're providing victim-centered support. And so I just encourage people, if there is that fear, they're not sure their local authorities will respond, to call us, because we have those connections of the trained detectives and individuals who focus on this area.
Where, and as best you can judge, is the community right now when it comes to human trafficking? You got involved with this 10 years ago. Your gala, your 10-year gala is coming up, and we'll mention that before we say goodbye again and give some specifics. But can you generalize, or can you give us an indication of maybe, I don't want to use the words improvement. I'll let you use your own words. But where are we today as compared to 10 years ago?
That's a great question. You know, there's legislation, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. That's a federal legislation. So that began in 2000. So we're at 25 years later. Work progress has been made, but it can slow down or speed up depending. New York State has their own legislation. And then the community involvement, I mean, that's partially one of our mission arms, is ending human trafficking through education, prevention, and restoration. The reason education is really important to us is because the community may not fully understand what that looks like in our region. You know, we see movies, we may hear stories of international crime, crossing state borders, but what it looks like in Western New York can be very different. And so we have our education piece is, now we get so many requests, we don't even seek it out.
Okay.
However, we are considering adding an outreach arm and bringing on a full-time person that can just center on it, because it is getting more requests. And we focus on school districts. We get into schools and we talk to youth about what to look out for. And it's not necessarily just human trafficking as a whole, but it's how the internet, how are the things they are doing making them more prone, and what they can be thoughtful about. And then we are getting involved with people that work with youth and doing education there. We involve human service providers. We've trained counseling agencies, healthcare providers. We go to faith-based communities. We get asked to do Rotary Club Zantas. You know, the more the community knows, the more likely they'll see something that could prevent or help someone. And that's a big piece. I would say still, even 10 years later, I've been with the organization 13, I still think about 50% of the people we speak to have no idea. You know, so there's still a lot of outreach to do.
Julie Palmer with us here on What's Next. And the reality of your work is it's going to take us into some darker areas. But we want to also just give you one more moment here before we say goodbye, just to focus on the fact that you guys are celebrating. Your 10-year gala is coming up. Again, tell us about what's going to happen that night.
Yeah, so September 25th, a Thursday night, 6 p.m., Clox Grove. Again, we're just really excited to celebrate not only what PATH has done, but all the people in the community. You know, it takes a community, and people may feel like, oh, that's good for them, what can I do? So many things. We have 50 volunteers. We have faith partners who will, if you're a person of faith and pray, we have people that are giving, whether it's private foundations, private funders, people that give monthly. We have people that give tangible items. You know, we have job postings. We're growing positions. There's so many ways. Attending awareness events, coming to this event. One simple way, it'll be a sit down dinner. Clox has a beautiful patio. If it's a nice night, you know, the first hour is hors d'oeuvres and mingling, and, you know, can enjoy the outdoors if it's nice. And then we're going to have dinner, sit down at 7. We're going to have our MC, Chelsea Lavelle. We're going to bring in Judge Pridgen to speak. We're going to have a history video, some testimonials, and our live auction again, where we're going to have some really fun stuff that we're going to be able to auction away where people can have opportunity to give, or if they don't participate in the auction, we'll still have other ways that they can give to whatever they feel led. But just really an opportunity to celebrate the community, our partners. Are going to acknowledge a few of our partners that have really stood by us these last 10 years and helped us to where we are today, and talk about future initiatives. We have some real exciting things happening right now for the future and some programs we're going to add, including some housing initiatives, adding some programs to better serve boys. So we're really excited about the expansion opportunities we're having, what's been accomplished, and then there's so much more work to do, but just encouraging people that we can do it together.
I was just going to say, enjoy the gala, enjoy marking and celebrating 10 years, and then to you and your staff, get back to work. There's a lot to be done, right?
Well, we all can be people against trafficking humans.
Absolutely. Julie Palmer is the executive director of PATH of Western New York, and she joins us today. Again, the website, if someone wants to find out about the gala, they can go to
PATHOFWNY.org, PATHOFWNY.org. There'll be a thing that'll flash right on the screen to take you right to the event page to register.
That was Julie Palmer with Jay Moran. Next on the show, we kick off Hispanic Heritage Month with a trip to El Pate. The What's Next team took a trip to El Pate Puerto Rican Community Center. There, we meet one of the board members, Ichady Rivera, as she gives us a tour of the center and some history behind it.
We started in a studio apartment on the west side, and now we're here. Yeah, this was big when we got here. And then it's divided into two parts. It's ran by Beatriz Flores. She's our executive director. And then we also have Jose Flores, who on this side does our jiu-jitsu program. And then on the other side is our cultural program.
Okay.
And so it is called El Pate because it's based out of Puerto Rican culture, in the sense that we use to build community, to teach the youth and others about their culture. We use over a 400-year-old music, which is bomba. And so in the middle, when you do bomba, it's in a circular or a U formation. And when you dance in the middle, it's called El Pate. So that's why we called it El Pate.
And that's before Europeans came.
Yeah, it's Bate is actually a Taino word. But then when the slaves were brought to Puerto Rico, then that's when bomba more started between the indigenous, and the maraca is played in our music because it's based by indigenous people. They're the ones who started a maraca, and then the barrel drums, the barriles, are brought from the Africans when they came. That is what they brought to it. So together in combination, bomba came, and it was a way not only to keep their culture alive while they were taken from their land, but also it was a way to build community in a way that they could speak and talk that not always other people understood. And it was also a way to communicate from plantation to plantation, I guess you could say.
So what is your heritage?
I'm Puerto Rican, 100%.
So when I was reading about the background on this, it intrigued me because, like you said, it's keeping alive this 400-year-old tradition. But at the same time, you know, your family members who came from Puerto Rico, maybe I'm wondering, like from a generational standpoint, does it seem like it's more important now to keep that tradition alive?
So it has ebbed and flowed throughout the years in how it has been seen through community. But it's always been about building community, and it's also been about resistance. It's known as our music of resistance, being a community that has been colonized for over 400 years, and still colonized. So the fact that we are still in that state, it is always something that has been in the background or the forefront, and right now it is very much in the forefront. So, yeah, it's very important. And it's also important because, you know, we talk about through bomba, there's community, because there's the barriles, the drummers, there's the singers, there's the people doing chorus, there's the people doing maraca, and then there's also a cuá, which is like a mini barrel that you play. And then there's the dancers. And then everything is not done through choreography. It's totally based in that moment. So the drummer has no idea what the dancer is going to do, and the dancer is thinking at that moment what it's going to do. And then the drummer knows what he or she is supposed to play on the drum based on how you move. And so it's literally having semi-nonverbal communication to people, building community and everyone cheering it on, and based on the music and based what you feel. There are different rhythms, there are different regions, and with this it is all played differently through different regions without the island, and then there are also different rhythms that are more accentuated in different areas as well.
Now, how about for you learning this? Is this something that was part of your family, or is this something you've learned here maybe?
So for me, I'm first generation. Uh-huh. I went back and forth to Puerto Rico since I was 2 years old. I am 45. I don't mind. Round don't crack. We doing good.
You didn't
good.
Have to give that.
We're doing
yeah.
good. I don't
You're,
mind.
Yes, you are. It's
the look
Unlike
is good.
Me.
It just feels it in the morning. That's all.
Right. 80 was a good
year. It was a good year. I think that's what it, all that was built in 80 was built well.
Nice. Fantastic.
And so, but with that, because I went back and forth, I was exposed to a lot. It was also how I was able to become fluent, so I'm completely bilingual. And being a first generation, I also had the duties of, like, sometimes translating, teaching my parents certain things, helping aunts and uncles. So that came into play as well. With the music, I was exposed. I grew up in Rochester, and we also had a dance company in Rochester that I witnessed and saw. There is actually very traditional skirts that you use when we do dance. And so my mom helped sew those skirts for the dance company over there at one point. And that's how I really got, like, oh, I loved, like, what little girl doesn't like skirts thrown around her living room floor. So I was playing around in those. And then I met Beatriz through the schools here before things really blew up, and said, oh my God, I remember this growing up. Like, this is so important because we have a very interesting shift here in Buffalo. We have a lot of what I consider second and third generation Puerto Ricans. And then we have people who are displaced from Puerto Rico and now are here, what we consider mainland Puerto Rico, and come here. And so because of that displacement, there's a need for connection. And because once you're second and third generation, things can get lost. So there's a need for reinforcement. And so building those two bridges, and also building the bridge where there's a saying often in Puerto Rico that, you know, you're either from there or from here. And so we're trying to, like, take that away and really just create that we're all family, we're all one, we all need to love each other. And so building that with the youth, because we have the conversation often that, you know, these are strides and struggles that take a really long time to create. So it's not because we're targeting youth, it's because it's the audience that makes more sense. Because if we can teach them, then when we're done and gone, and as I like to say, I'm sitting on a rocking chair on my porch, chilling, I know everything's fine because we taught them, they know what to do, they know their roots, they know who they are, they know what the basis of our culture is and what they represent and the weight behind that, and then everything is a much better place.
What else would you like to show me here? I mean, this is quite the space.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
This
it really is.
Yeah, and then like I said, we also have our own library. It's all books based by Latino writers, Puerto Rican writers, and we've even had an author come and do a story time from Puerto Rico with her book, and she came and read to the students and everything. It was great. But all the students, during class, they love to fiddle through the books if, like, we have a lot of families, so it's like one sibling is sitting out, they'll look through the library while the other one's taking class and that kind of thing. But they are also welcome to take books. If students at times, if they're doing research, now we, for the first time, are getting a little bigger of a group that have graduated up and are in college. So if they need a book for research, they grab it. We help them not only through, you know, building community through, you know, the music, but because we build community, we then become a resource for everything. So I, in my morning job, work for Say Yes Buffalo.
Oh.
And so because I work for Say Yes Buffalo, I help the students with any college transition stuff. We kind of become a committee. If they're applying for scholarships, there's like two of us, three, Beatriz, will sit down and be like, okay, this your essay looks good, send it, this kind of thing. We talk about majors, we talk about what their interests are, so they really are picking things that they enjoy and want to study. And then we also go through the financial aid process with them and kind of explain the advantages living in Buffalo because of Say Yes, that they have the opportunity to take advantage of for college.
So I like to read, and I'm always looking for book titles to follow up on. So what, you got any suggestions of a Puerto Rican author for me?
Author, no. Book, my always go-to is When I Was Puerto... No, hold on.
Okay, I'm going to chase you. I can't. You're on mic, so I'm going to chase you all the way over here.
War Against All Puerto Ricans.
War Against All Puerto Ricans. Ricans.
That's a great book.
Yeah?
That I always recommend. It's a good one to
non-fiction
really...
Non-fiction or...
Non-fiction.
Non-fiction.
Yeah, okay. It's just a good one to really get into depth to what colonization has done to the island and what has done to the people. And it talks a lot about movements within the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and all the things that happened during those times and the liberation movement that was been tried and tried again on the island that many people don't know of.
Final question, stupid question, because I already know the answer, but you love your heritage.
I say I beyond love it. Mm. It's not like just like, oh, I love it. It's so great. Like, it's what I was born to be. I couldn't imagine being anything else.
Then we sit with the founders of El Bajo Cariba, a vibrant Dominican-led initiative for cultural representation and community empowerment, celebrating culture, heritage, and unity through music, food, events, and local engagement. First, we speak with their vice president, Jessica Amasita, as she talks about the organization's mission to promote Dominican culture in Buffalo and West New York, and emphasizes the need for community education to dispel misconceptions about different Latino and Hispanic identities.
So you're one of the founders. So what inspired you? What motivated you to start?
Yeah, so it all started with a group of older Dominican ladies saying, you know, we need a space to meet, to embrace our culture, to bring out more of what Dominican is and Dominican culture is in Western New York. And we needed more unity. We needed to bring our people together because there's a lot of Dominicans in Buffalo and Western New York, but we work hard in our community, but we don't celebrate enough of each other.
So we bring up a lot of good points inside there. So I guess the question that follows is, you know, what, I guess, where is the Dominican culture right now in Buffalo? How would you like to see it evolve?
Yeah, so right now, there are a lot of Dominican established restaurants. There's a lot of Dominican businesses. There's a lot of Dominican salons. There are a lot of Dominicans in our school systems, teachers, professionals in the medical field as well. And we work, like I said, we work a lot, but we also need to embrace and celebrate our culture and also teach the community who aren't of Dominican origin to learn more about our culture. So we are right now in Buffalo, in Tonawanda, in Amherst, in Williamsville. We're dispersed throughout all of Western New York, actually.
Now, are you originally from Buffalo?
I am originally from Santiago, Dominican Republic. So I was born in the island, and then I was raised in the Bronx, New York.
Okay.
So I've been living in Buffalo for a little bit over 10 years, so I do consider myself also a Buffalonian.
Wow, good. There was an old joke once that said that anybody who like had a layover in the Buffalo airport was considered a Buffalo native. So if you've been here 10 years, you
definitely
have.
Yes.
So to that, how did it come to pass? Did you... school brought you to Buffalo? What brought you to Buffalo?
My parents actually bought their own home, their first home. It's an opportunity to live in Buffalo because it's economically safe. You know, it's not as expensive as New York City, but there's also a good opportunity to grow here. So whether you're coming in with your family or as a business, as an entrepreneur, there's a lot of great opportunity to expand and grow. At first, I have to tell you, to be honest, I did not want to come to Western New York.
You're
city
among
girl.
Many.
I'm like, I'm going to go to cows and all this other stuff. And that wasn't the reality. The reality was that I was given a lot of opportunity to be in leadership positions because there are a lot of opportunities here in Buffalo to help community members, but also to establish yourself as a community leader and advocate for things like social justice, equity, and really what El Barrio Caribe stands on is celebrating your culture, no matter where you're from. Specifically, we wanted to identify as El Barrio Caribe because that stands for the Caribbean hood. Okay?
Okay.
Stay,
I like that name.
Stay with me, right? Okay. So basically, the African diaspora is immensely huge, and we want everyone to feel representative when it comes to being from the Caribbean. So that's why we identified it as, this is the appropriate name for it.
Okay.
The El Barrio Caribe.
So though you're of Dominican
descent,
mm-hmm. you're reaching out to all people of Caribbean descent.
Yes. So whether Jamaican, whether they are from Puerto Rico, you know what, we are a lot of, it's a joke that we say that we're all cousins. You know, so that's one of the things that it's really important to us is that we bring more unity and representation. So our goal is to connect with other Dominicans, other people that are from the Caribbean, and also individuals that might live in the east side of Buffalo, in Williamsville, in East Amherst, the South Towns and North Towns, everyone from Buffalo so that they can learn about our culture. So we are looking to connect with youth, with families, with professionals, anyone really.
So about the Dominican culture, then. Mm-hmm. Let's maybe just explore that a little. I mean, we were getting into it here with just a little bit ago about Puerto Rican culture, the misconceptions, or just the fact that people don't really even know that much about it, right? I mean, is that what you find when, you know, when you talk to somebody who's maybe lived in Buffalo their whole life and, you know, has no connection whatsoever?
Yeah, so funny you mentioned that. So when I first came to live in Buffalo, I resided in the east side of Buffalo. For the 10 years that I've lived in Buffalo, I've lived in the east side of Buffalo. Majority of people know that Western New York is very segregated compared to New York City. So one of the things that I've used to come across is young children looking at me and looking at my skin color and saying, you speak Spanish? You're Latina? You don't belong here. From the east side, right? You should go live in the west side. And one of the things that I would do often, not even being part of El Barrio Caribe at the time, was educate them. Well, I'm Dominican. And they're like, what is a Dominican? You look like you're Puerto Rican. So that's where it came from, educating the community, especially children that think that all individuals that speak Spanish are either Puerto Rican or Mexican. And there's so many of us that speak Spanish that individuals may not know that until they start becoming more aware and more educated on the fact that there's different identities, different ethnicities related to the Latino and Hispanic population. So it's something that we need more of. We need more education about what our different ethnicity, what our different cultures, so that we can create the lines of not just unity, but just understanding each other. Mm-hmm. And knowing that it's okay to be different.
Right.
It's good. It's good to be different because we have more to embrace. We have more to celebrate.
So, and then I'm wondering also about just in this time that we're in right now, this era, whatever you want to call it, that at the same time you want to highlight Dominican culture mm-hmm. and heritage, but at the same time, do you feel like Hispanic speaking people or Hispanic people kind of need to also be maybe unified and together and be its own special force?
So during this presidential election and, you know, political game that we're in right now, the Latino-Hispanic community needs to work together in order to keep each other safe, in order to keep each other protected, to help each other out, whether it's updating our visas, whether it's applying for passports, whether it's, you know, staying connected to their families, whether it's here in the United States or in their homelands. So there's a lot to unpack there with your question, yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to follow up with just a little bit, and you can take it wherever you want, but just, you know, I think we're here trying to celebrate and enlighten, but
yes.
At the same time, you use the term safety, right?
Yes.
Have you, either yourself or people you know from around here, have you, is that, been an issue recently in any way that you know?
Yeah, so with ICE deportations, that has been an issue. A lot of individuals that I personally know don't want to come out to the community, whether it's that's to work or to, you know, get groceries or just take a drive.
Right,
that's happening here locally in Buffalo. That's happening all over Western New York. If you're not familiar with Western New York, for our audience, there are a lot of farms in the area. So there are a lot of migrant workers. And you could just imagine that some of them may not want to go to work because of fear of not being able to go back to their homes. But also just that ability to celebrate themselves, celebrate their culture, and just join community events or participate in things happening in the community. I've seen, as someone that works in the community, not as many individuals come out. And when they do come out, they don't want to provide their name, they don't want to provide any kind of identification because of this fear and not feeling safe. And that's something that we need a plan. Community members, community leaders, we need a plan. Because our families, our friends, I don't want to sound rude, but it's something that community leaders need to work on, because we can't have individuals that reside, our residents, living in fear. That we cannot. That's like something like how the school system says bullying is not tolerated. There should be, you know, policies around it won't be tolerated for like ICE, for instance, to come into certain institutions or businesses to come and bully residents.
I appreciate your
thank you for your
frankness
questions.
On that particular question. And then let's just get back to Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yeah.
How about for you? Well, you know, what do you guys have planned for the month? Anything?
Yeah. So we have events planned up. For example, skating, poetry nights, and again, these are things that we want people to come and have fun. Mm-hmm. Because with everything going on in the world right now, we still need that ability to have fun and joy. And another event that we're planning is bingo night.
Okay. And, you know, I asked this question just a little while ago. And I'm always looking for titles for books to read.
Hmm.
Can a Dominican author for me that, or a title that I should look up?
I forgot her name as an author, but there's a book called Dominicana.
Okay.
And she is actually someone that resided in New York City. So it goes through, it's a novel, and it goes through her experience and her journey and her family. If you don't know much about Latino, Hispanic people, we are big on family.
Mm-hmm.
So it talks a lot about those traditions, and I think that's a great book to start if you haven't got yourself into reading books.
Then we sit with the founder, Edivanya Tunmore, to discuss her background in the military as part of the U.S. Marine Corps and the need for equitable representation of diverse cultures.
I write, I advocate, I cause trouble, I do a little bit of everything. I live, I flow.
So, wow, boy. Do you realize that you just gave me like an hour's worth of questions in just that one statement?
Ask away.
So, we'll start kind of why we came. We, you know, it's mm-hmm. Hispanic Heritage Month. That's what we came.
Yes.
So, what does that mean for you?
Well, I feel like Hispanic heritage is not just a month for me. It's who I am. I am Dominican born, raised, and I moved here when I was 16 years old to Rhode Island, joined the military, which is where I expanded on my friendships.
You were in the Marines.
I was in the Marine
Corps. That's not the military. It's beyond that.
Well, you know what? When I was in high school, a recruiter came in for the Army, and I said, if I'm going to join the military, I might as well just go through the best branch. So the toughest, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Was it worth it?
It was worth it. Yes, absolutely. It was a great experience. I'm not a fan of the military now, but while I was in it, I think that everybody should experience something like that. It builds discipline. It gives you an appreciation for the citizens of your country and why we are the way that we are as a country, where we function from, where we are headed, and what our values truly are. I think the military teaches our youth a lot, although it is used as a tool for, I guess, doing damage to the world. It can also be a tool to do great good for the world.
And what a, boy, there's so much here with the conversations I've had already. I'm getting curious about this. At the same time, there's this a sense that, you know, the military has almost developed this political divide, not internally, but from a... But who's appropriating it,
right? It is. So that's what I mean when I say it is a tool. So it is a tool of whichever administration is in place. And we have weaponized the military, or we have taken military service, and instead of using it as the tool that is intended to be to protect and serve our citizens and to protect our invested interests around the world and to bring diplomacy to the world, it has become a weapon to subjugate, to oppress, and to cause chaos, disruption, and destabilization around the world. So we, in essence, have taken the tool that we developed in order to maintain order around the world and have taken it in order to control the world. And I think that's where we, as a country and as a nation, are failing. Instead of becoming patriots, we have become nationalists, where we don't hold our country responsible for the actions. We just accept the actions, excuse the actions. Patriotism means you are proud of the things and the values that your country emulates. Nationalism means you're proud of whatever comes out of your country, regardless of whether it's good, evil, or bad. So I think that there needs to be a very clear distinction between nationalism and patriotism, and we should go back to being patriotic and being proud of the values that we emulate as a nation, as opposed to simply just being proud of being American, simply because we're a country that controls, you know, the world through force.
You know, I may just transcribe that answer and just post it for myself, because that was an amazing analysis. It really was. Wow. I'm so glad to be here. So but let's get back to how you – so you said Rhode Island, military, but now we're in Buffalo.
Oh, my gosh. So I joined the military, went to Okinawa, Japan, moved to Miramar, San Diego, moved to D.C. I worked in the Pentagon at the Missile Defense Agency. Then I moved to Chicago. I worked in an art gallery. And I was transitioning to go to Miami, and I stopped in Buffalo to go to Niagara Falls. My niece passed away, and I had to go to Florida, and I spent all my money on that. So living out of my car for the following 3 months, I found a job. I started working in finance, and the rest is history. I've been here for 17 years. I've created an amazing life, and yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's incredible.
From homelessness to just thriving.
Well, I'm sorry for your trials. I know you're the type of person that seems that embraces that.
Every single experience is a lesson that you take with you. You can either take it and turn it into something truly positive and magical, or you can take it and dwell on it and allow it to reshape who you are. 2022 was a really hard year for me. It reshaped how I looked at the world. And it changed a lot of me internally, and I am now coming back to self and realizing that all that negativity that I allowed to shape me, I needed to re-energize myself. That's why I started with Barrio Caribe, because I didn't feel seen. I didn't feel like I had a community. Dominicans are scattered all over, so I felt like my culture was not being represented. It was not being seen. It was not being felt. And that's what El Barrio Caribe is. It's a movement for Dominican culture and Caribbean culture to be felt in Western New York. We have Trinidadian, Jamaicans, Barbados, Bahamas. We have Dominicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans. We are the Caribbean represents every cultural aspect of the world, essentially, because we have the Africans that have been brought to the islands, and the Spaniards, and the Taino heritage. We have everything, and it's a melting, blending pot of everything that our cultures should be representing in Buffalo, and I didn't see it.
So talk about the culture as it stands right now in Buffalo. We're talking about Hispanic culture. What about it?
Well, so there is a lot of culture in Buffalo. It's just not represented and it's not seen.
Okay.
I've been in Buffalo for, I think, since 2007. So that's 19 years. I don't know. I don't know how to do math.
18. You got 18.
Okay. I'm really bad at math. I'm great at words. So I've been here for 19 years, and I have constantly felt like I didn't have my people. I didn't see my peers. I didn't see my culture. Growing up in the Dominican Republic and going back to my countryside and my people and being loud and joyful and fun. We love music. We love culture. We love just commiserating with one another. And I didn't have that here. So when I met these Dominican ladies, I was like, oh my gosh, it's my people. You know, it's the same joy. It's the same beautiful spirit that I always often visit and miss from my island. And I found it here. And I said, we need to expand on that because there's no reason why other people should not experience the same joys that we get on our homeland. And they should be feeling seen. Children that are growing up here should be feeling seen. Like, they should have their culture also be reflected back to them. So in Buffalo, I see a lot of Puerto Rican representation, which is beautiful because they are our cousins. But I just don't see anybody else being represented, so I felt like everybody needs to have at least a little bit of a voice, and that's what Barrio Caribe does. It's not just for Dominicans or Caribbean, but it's also for small businesses. It's for people that don't feel like their voices have been heard. Often, we can help you find platforms, find ways that you can get that voice out, because I think everybody should be feeling seen, heard, and loved.
I'm interested about what you write. So you identified yourself as many things, but you did put writer in there. I'm interested in that.
So I write political articles because okay. I'm very politically active being in the military. The past 16 years, I spent trying to have a child, and unfortunately, I was unable to, but in the process of doing that, I went through the VA, the Veterans Healthcare System, which did not provide these benefits for women or men at all, infertility benefits. So I've had to fight from the very inception of that until right now I'm sitting in the Senate. But that was my journey. That's where I was focused. So I didn't have anything that was distracting me. So sure. Now that I don't have that distraction, and now that I can focus on it, I wanna have my people feel seen, and I wanna, you know, feel like my people have a voice. And in order to do that, you also have to be able to, I guess, rev up the politicians that are making these decisions when it comes to who gets the funding, who gets the representation, where do we put our focus into. And I also did work for government.
Okay.
Local governments.
You don't have to be, you don't have to feel bad about that.
No, I'm just saying.
That's about the shyest you've appeared since
well,
I already sat down.
I don't really like talking about local government because I talk a lot of smack about them.
That's all right.
So I don't talk there. About them personally, and I don't name them by name, but I do talk about the offices because I feel that it is my duty, my civic duty. And I think every single person, they should be challenging these politicians, not just giving them a platform constantly. I think that politicians are representing our values, and right now the values that we are giving back to our community, to our people, are not very good values to be living by. So therefore, we have to hold those that are supposed to be our leaders as the leaders that they're supposed to be. You are supposed to be setting the example. And if the example is that you are going to be corrupt and you are going to be a fraud and you're just going to show up when it's convenient for you, then you are setting the wrong example. And I'm someone that calls those things out in right. my writing.
Okay.
So, yes.
Can we find your writing? Or
I get published in the Latino Village.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So I'm writing
Alberto
for
Capas, Albert. Right? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
Alberto Capas. Yeah, yeah, Alberto Capas. And yeah. I wrote an article for about the VA and my experience for the Buffalo News as well. So.
Okay. Well, when he sends it to me next month, I'll make sure I look for your byline.
There you go.
Very good. So we also had some discussions here, and it doesn't sound like you're going to be shy about it, but the presence of ICE here in Western New York. What would you say? Is it getting the notoriety, the spotlight that maybe it should? I feel like a lot of the stories I'm hearing are elsewhere.
So a lot of it is happening here. I know personally that I've been reached out to asking for contacts on lawyers. We actually had one of the people that were on the float that is one of the business owners, they had one of their employees be picked up on a technicality for their paperwork, two of their employees, so they lost their business for weeks. These people were at a bus stop, and there was no reason for them to be targeted, yet they were. They were taken in a technicality on their paperwork, sent them to, I think, Alabama. So I do know that it happens here quite often. The issue that I have with, I guess, our local leaders, our community leaders, and just the citizens in general, is that we advocate for protection and we're the city of good neighbors, but we're not being very neighborly. We are allowing, like right now the Supreme Court just passed that we can, Latinos can be targeted just for speaking Spanish. Mm. So if that is the case and we can be profiled simply because of our language, I believe that it is the duty of our leaders, local, state, whatever, to be the barrier between what they are claiming are unlawful laws and legislation and implementation of ICE policies. They should be the barriers and they should be the protection because, once again, our police, our firefighters, our elected leaders, the council members, our legislators, they're there to serve and protect the citizens through their offices. So what are you doing if you are allowing your citizens, your constituents, to be targeted, and you just throw your hands up and say, oh, well, this is the Republicans' fault, or this is the Democrats' fault? I believe that it is an American issue, and it should be addressed as Americans, not as Democrats, not as Republicans. And that's why I'm anti-establishment. So I don't believe in either party, and I believe that that is really what's rupturing the fabric of our country.
But let's move back. So your vision then for the Dominican community, the Hispanic community here in Western New York, it sounds like you're working hard, you're reaching out, you're trying to connect people. But what's the vision?
The vision is for us to be represented, for us to be heard, for us to be seen, for us to be on equal footing as everybody else. We often talk about equality. I don't want equality, I want equity. I believe that we are all equally able, but we are not all equally given the same resources. So I want the same resources that are being given to other people to be given to my community. I want to be able to create the same things that everybody else is already saying they are creating for us. El Barrio Caribe is a movement. It's not just it's a cultural movement, it's a political movement, it's a movement to shake our culture from the underground and make it flourish. And be seen and be felt and be heard. So I think that for the Hispanic community in Western New York, I am hoping that we are able to unify ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why all these women are coming together. They're all business owners or have organizations, and we're all coming together to make sure that it is a visible and felt thing, because Buffalo has notoriously been known to have older men dominate politically, economically, etc. So I think it's time for us to shift how the Latin community has functioned historically and to be given the opportunities to people that are actually making the changes and doing the work, like Beatriz Flores, like Maria Cruz, like Tairin Tapia, you know, like Jessica.
And then
do not ask me what book from the Dominican author, because I don't have one.
Darn. I thought a writer would have that. That's all right. But actually, that was not what I was going to ask you. I was just going to ask, as you were speaking, so many of the things that you're talking about, I could almost kind of hear our audience, our listening audience, just saying, yeah, I believe in that. I believe in that concept. And so I'm wondering then, you know, how would you like to see people get involved, no matter what their heritage is?
Just showing your culture. I think that we are embarrassed to show our culture because we are afraid of judgment. There's so many stereotypical, the stereotypes that you have about cultures and how they don't blend together or they don't come together. It doesn't matter whether you feel like there's already organizations, just represent your culture. I think representation, regardless of where it's coming from, and being proud of where you come from, I think that does wonders. Because right now, as our government and as people are trying to shut us down and to diminish us and to minimize us, this is the time for us to expand and to take up space and to be big and to be loud and to, you know, be rebellious.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for not just your time, but being so open. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jay. I really appreciate the opportunity. This is wonderful.
That will do it for today's show. We'll be back on Wednesday with a sit-down conversation with Talia Rodriguez, who is running for the Buffalo School Board's West District. This has been What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.